Paranormal Truth and Reality with host Chris Houston. A show for those with a passion for the paranormal. And now, welcome to the show.
Welcome to Paranormal Truth and Reality. I'm your host, Christopher Houston. We're here with a very exciting guest tonight, Matt Benton. Matt Benton just spent quite a while putting together a film called Man vs. Paranormal. We're going to talk about that in a little bit of detail tonight and get to know him here personally. Welcome, Matt. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
Let's just jump into it a little bit. What made you decide to do a paranormal film?
Well, the paranormal is what fascinated me for many years. It's the thing that's it's always drived me. Let's say driven. I've been driven in this field for a long time because it's something that's it's not been explored enough. Something that science should evaluate what this is and find a hypothesis, hypotheses and stuff like that for this field. And it's something that isn't researched enough, I don't think, in the proper way. Ever since I've had experiences as a kid and had this one major experience that made me decide to become an investigator, I felt like this should be something I should do for a living. And this is how I wanted to live my life. So I decided to make also, I love film. I've always loved movies and how they created, watched behind the scenes of how they did everything. I was always fascinated by it, and then I got into it and learned that I have a talent and an artistic mind for this type of stuff. And apparently people say I'm good at it, so that I decided to keep pursuing it. And then, you know, paranormal and filmmaking go hand in hand, so it works pretty well. And also you get to connect with people. You get to show people in another way, because science, for a lot of people, it's boring when they just read about it in the books. So why not try and do it into something entertaining? So that's what my goal is, and I want to try and do that more in Man vs. Paranormal. And I've even created a rig specifically for the show. The movie, and also for my future episodes for PRU. So, yeah, there's nothing you can – it's something that can always be researched for your whole life pretty much, and it'll never get boring. You'll always find new things. You'll always experience new things. You'll always come up with new questions. It never stops with the paranormal.
Well, that's definitely the truth. I know, like you mentioned, science can be – for me, it's exciting. I mean, I love to talk to physicists, and I love to talk to scientists and geologists and zoologists and all these people that dabble into the paranormal every now and then. But like you said, it can be quite a boring, mundane task, though it's fascinating to listen to. A lot of it is reading and talking a lot of language most people don't understand, but it does apply a lot to the paranormal.
Yeah, it does.
It's just a lot of people don't think about that. They're used to seeing, and you know this because you saw them too, we all have, they're used to seeing the average television show and think, okay, well, this is what it is. But it goes so much deeper than that.
Yeah.
So let's get into – well, let's take a step back. I know you mentioned that you had a personal experience when you were young. That's kind of unique because that's what gets a lot of us going. So if you're comfortable with that, let's share the experience a little bit so that the fans can kind of get a feel for you before they start watching the documentary. And then, of course, I'm sure you'll want to talk about your YouTube episodes that goes past the documentary into your actual investigations and so forth. So let's just start from the beginning.
Well, then it goes back. From when I was just a kid, I think I was probably five years old, all the way to that's as far back as I can remember, and then all the way to probably I would say 15, 14. I would experience shadow people all the time. Like, I would see shadow people every single day, and it would affect my dreams, and it kind of messed with me a bit. something that didn't seem like a good entity I was dealing with at the time. And something I thought was normal to everyone, or maybe not. Now that I'm thinking about it, I'm trying to think back of what my thoughts were back then, because I remember keeping quiet about it and not talking about it. And then finally when I did, my mom was saying, like, I think I was walking to Sam's Club or something like that, and I saw another one, and I asked her, do you see shadow people or these things that go in the corner of your eyes or something like that? Mm-hmm. She says, that's just your brain. It's just most likely your brain. And you know what? I kind of believe that in a way too. That makes sense. But there's a lot – I've seen shadow people head on too a lot as a kid too. It wasn't just on the corner of the eyes. So it was like something I needed to discover more. I was very intrigued into the paranormal ever since I was a kid, read a whole bunch of books and everything. Never once thought about becoming an investigator though. That thought never even crossed my mind until 2011. And the summer of 2011, it crossed my mind because of a personal experience I had at the old Washoe Club in Virginia City, Nevada. And it was the first time I actually tried to speak to them. I never tried to speak to them before. I just always experienced it. So I decided to ask questions because it was said to be haunted, the old Washoe Club. And it was said that there's a little girl spirit or something like that in the crypt area or downstairs. And so I asked the question, if there's a little girl here, can you please move something or make some kind of noise? And then all of a sudden, literally about 5 seconds later, a brick gets thrown. A piece of a brick. And it scares all of us. There's only three of us in there in the crypt. And the crypt is small. It's not like anyone could go hide behind something or anything like that. There is people, there wasn't people above us, but there is an above area to do that type of stuff, except it's very creaky and old wood up there. We would have heard someone coming up. So, like, all of a sudden we heard a very loud brick, and I saw it on the corner of my eye, too. And at the time, before I was an investigator, I ran out. I would never do that now, but I was an investigator at the time. So ran out, thought it was very interesting. I went back in, grabbed the brick, kept it as a souvenir. I stayed in there longer and tried to get more activity and everything. But that experience was like, oh, my God. You could communicate to these things and you could have responses. That's amazing. That's when I decided, like, I think I wanted to do this for a living now, that if you could get responses from them. That's what pretty much started it, was that one experience. And then I started my own team back in high school. It was called the Paranormal Extreme Crew. it was a bad name, but I was very amateur in the beginning. Obviously, you start somewhere though, and I gathered all the information from the books and everything I've read, and also from the TV shows I would watch and stuff like that. That's where my knowledge came from. But then you start to change completely as an investigator. The more experience you have, you come up with your own techniques, you come up with your own ways of doing things the more you do it. And beforehand, I only had the books, and that's about it. I mainly had the books. I read so many books about them. And this is a fascinating subject that can never get boring to me. I kept going on from Paranormal Extreme Crew. I finally got into this show. I met up with Dante Reeder. He's from Soul Seekers. Uh-huh. And he was also on the Travel Channel for Paranormal Challenge. So I met up with him. We hung out. And then I joined his team because the team I was with was not professional, and I wanted to do something more professional because that was just my friends and everything I was with. Because it was just with my friends, and they weren't in it like I was. They weren't as passionate as I was. I was the one buying all the equipment. I was the one paying for all the investigations, because the others were not into it as much as I was. But then I found Dante, the only person I've ever found in California that was into the paranormal like I was. And then we started doing investigating for about 2 to 3 years. And let's just say that I've had a lot of, I experienced a lot. It was a great dynamic, but there's some personal stuff that I'm not going to talk about on air between us. And then I decided to join my own team because I wanted it even more professional. Let's just say that. I create my own team, and then I created PRU, and I moved to Indiana for not only to film my film that I've been thinking about since 2012. I've been wanting to film this. But I didn't feel like I was experienced enough as a filmmaker, and I didn't feel like I was experienced enough as an investigator. So I waited a while until I also, on top of that, I needed the technology, the cameras and everything to do it. So it took a long time to be able to make the film. Until 2016, I tried to start it as an episode. Actually, it wasn't originally going to be a movie. It was originally going to be a like pilot episode thing I was doing. And then I decided to do something different because films are, I like documentary films a lot. And they're more in depth. They're more complex than an episode would be. So I decided I wanted to challenge my filmmaking experience. So pretty much I wanted to challenge myself and make a full feature film and make it more complex and for the reason why it's being made and everything. And incorporate with the show idea, Man vs. Paranormal, into it. And so if I don't ever do this again, at least I made a film out of it. And it was a very interesting experiment to try out. And the reason why I wanted to try out this experiment is for two reasons. One, they say that paranormal activity increases because of less people being around. So if you're by yourself, maybe activity increases. And two, they say that certain entities feed off of fear. And I wanted to see if activity increases because of that too. And it was very interesting. And it was also something I could push myself as an investigator too. Pushing yourself to be in a location by yourself for 3 days by yourself with no human contact at all, with no one. Just you, completely isolated. And it was a very interesting experience.
Well, that's actually a good concept. I mean, you brought up a couple of things. It's very interesting. I mean, the beauty of a documentary is because you can get more in depth. Like you said, when you're doing a TV show, you have a limited time span. You collect all of this footage, and you got to slap all of that together. So a lot of the really good stuff, I like to say, you know, some people don't get a whole concept of what can happen. Whereas with a documentary, you've got plenty of time to put all of that together. You still have to cut some things if you're limiting it to an hour or two, but not nearly as much as 45 minutes when you got a commercial in between or less.
Okay. This is probably going to be an hour, 30-minute documentary. I'm just guessing because I haven't edited it yet. But it's three locations, and I'm there total of all three locations. I'm there for like 9 days, so investigating. And I'm a lot of people. Yeah,
one of the other things I think is amazing about your concept is you're doing something that most people don't think about. You're getting into that psychological event. The fact that, hey, look, when you're alone and you're scared and you may be in a haunted place, you may not be in a haunted place. These are all things that roll around in your head along with what you're seeing, what's going on, the emotions involved, and you know, the whole thing, I guess you could say, and how it affects a person.
In the trailer that I did, I mentioned like the side effects of prolonged isolation, what happens to you. Uh-huh. And a lot of that is what I felt is those things. And your brain stimuli decreases a lot. You don't feel as motivated when you're cut from society. You're cut from I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm a very people person, talk a lot, and you know, I don't know. I don't know. I didn't put myself in the situation like preparing for that part of it. I went in right from, you know, being able to, you know, be with friends and working with other filmmakers and everything all the time, other investigators all the time, and then I just go straight to complete isolation with no human contact. So I feel like it was an interesting experience, but my brain stimuli decreased a lot. It was like, it's hard to explain, to be honest. It's just something you have to be there for it to understand and not have any contact with anyone.
Isolation can be a scary thing when you're not used to it, when you are no longer around everybody and you limit yourself to an atmosphere that can be dark, dank, cold.
It's cold, all right. Actually, every location I did was pretty cold because I went at the worst times every time. Monroe House was like 22 degrees. Same with House of Wills. Higginsport was a little bit better. It was like in the 30s or 40s, something like that. But yeah, it's pretty bad.
So along your journey in the film, and I know you don't want to give a lot away because obviously we want people to watch the film, but along in your journey in the film, you know, including isolation, and you can see this, and I threw up on my Facebook page. I'll also throw it on RTP, and we'll make sure that you have some links so that you can go, listeners, to Matt's page so you can see the previews and so forth. And you mentioned something in a preview when you actually show a couple of people. You got some evidence. And now, I haven't seen the video yet, obviously, but I would believe that being isolated and knowing from experience, because I have been alone, and deliberately sometimes go into areas alone just to see if I can get a reaction with a simple recorder. You probably got some things most people simply never get as a team, if I had to guess.
There is one thing I got that I've never been able to get before until I did this experiment. And that's something that you see in the trailer. But there's more to it that I'm not going to give away. There's more to it that happens during that moment. As you see in the trailer, I'm just sitting down asking for the entity to move the door. And then it starts to move. I'm not going to say how much. Not going to say anything about it until the film's out. But the door moves by itself while I'm asking for it. Let's just say that much. And that's something you don't really capture as much. It's very rare for something to happen on cue in the paranormal and something that big, like that extreme, to happen in the paranormal on cue. Actually, it's very freaking rare. It's very rare. So that right there, I'm very excited to use in the film. I'm very happy I captured it. This film is the first time I've ever captured anything move on camera, to be honest. I've had experiences with things being thrown across the room and everything, but never caught it on camera. And this is the first time I captured something moving on camera. It was in this film.
Those things are so hard to capture because they happen so quickly. I know I've had things thrown at my head from the back, and things fall off of walls and go across rooms, but it happens so quickly, even if you've got a camera out, it's really hard to get it.
Yeah. Another thing that I thought was cool about this, like I've said before, I've had experiences of things moving and everything. Like, for example, if you watch Soul Seekers, I had a voice recorder thrown across the room. And I actually saw that with my own eyes. And there wasn't a camera pointing at it, though. And it was really cool experience. Seeing something move with nothing physical doing it is one of the huge reasons what makes me stay in this field. Because stuff like that is amazing. Absolutely amazing.
And totally unexplainable sometimes. You witness it and you're going, okay, can I reproduce this? Can I figure it out? Can I look around? Maybe it did this, maybe it did that. But in the long run, a lot of times, there's no way to reproduce it.
Exactly. Sorry, I had to put that cat away. One second. Okay. Okay. Yeah, exactly. That's very true. Like, I go through a very strict debunking process, and I even had a friend of mine, Justin Brown, help me try and debunk this too, because he's like me. We want to find every explanation for it to be something natural, because that's the proper way of investigating, in my opinion. This is something we weren't able to debunk. And we show in the movie, you know, how we debunked it. And you, it's pretty, you can't really, there, like, the only other thing I could think of is maybe a fishing wire, like, for faking. But the thing is, I'm trying to think about that because I never did it, so I don't really know what it'll look like. I would think that there would be probably in the sunlight, because in the video there's sunlight coming through the door. I would think you would probably see it through with the sun. I wish I bought fishing wire and went back to try and disprove that too, but I was never able to do that. But we did try to do something with the wind, try and prove that that it wasn't the wind.
Yeah, you would be able to actually see it with fishing wire. There is a invisible wire that's used in a lot of film sets. I don't know if you've ever seen it before, to do little tricks that that the behind-the-scenes people can do. But it's very expensive, and most people can't afford it or find it. Fishing wire is very reflective. So if you've got sunlight coming in the room, you should be able to see it. You might have to look, but you're going to find it.
Yeah, I would think so too, especially with the sun pointing straight at the door. I think it would. I haven't tried it, so I wasn't able to test that out. But all I can say is that footage is 100% real, and we try and debunk the wind, and we do. We don't find anything that can make that move that that is natural. Justin and I were going through that for hours trying to figure it out, and we couldn't. So,
listeners, just so that you know, Justin Brown has his own website and his own show called Interface Death. For him to not be able to debunk something, especially when he's working with another investigator, actually says a lot. I know that you don't know him very well, but feel free to look him up. He's here in Ohio. Amazing man. I've had him on the show before. He's a great guy. But he takes the science and the debunking very, very seriously. So if he reviewed that and couldn't figure out a way to debunk it, that says a lot.
Yeah, he's a good friend of mine, actually. He's actually probably my best friend when it comes to the paranormal field. Actually, no, just best friend in general. he's a really cool guy. We have very similar views in a lot of things. Very similar views. Very similar theories also. That's why we get along so well. And we want to go through the same debunking process. He's taught me some things. And he's a pretty cool guy. He's definitely someone I want to work with for future projects too.
Yeah, he's an amazing man. I know he started from scratch, got a lot of his equipment, got his blue screens and so forth. And I talked to him a lot during that process. And we conveyed back and forth on Facebook. I picked his brain 1,000 times when I was growing.
Yeah, he's fun to pick brains with.
Yeah, he is.
Now I just know him too well.
So let's talk about your scientific approach. I know we all have different types of approaches. We all have different types of situations where we, you know, as you're saying, as an investigator, there's no rule book. I mean, you don't really have a guidebook or anything. So a lot of us start the same way. We start just reading a lot of material if we're fascinated. And then you kind of develop things as you go. So when you're a rookie, and we've all been there. I've explained this to some rookies quite recently, actually. We've all been there. We've all made the common mistakes everybody does, because it's a learning process with nobody to guide you.
Yeah.
So once you started developing your skill, what type of science did you apply?
Well, for example, here's the thing. Audio manipulation is in ITC. There's a lot of investigators doing ITC research right now. And the only issue with ITC research with the, like all the apps and the radio stations is that you can't cross check it. You can't cross check to say, oh, that wasn't a radio station or that wasn't in the bank, et cetera, et cetera. So that's an issue when it comes to science. It doesn't go with the scientific method. All you can say is like, oh, it said that word, but you can't cross check it to prove that it wasn't the radio station or it wasn't the bank. So I developed an app with Matt Payne that you can. So I have, yes, it has also the banks and also IP sweep. So I did that mainly because I wanted other ITC researchers to use the app too. Like be still interested in the app because if it was all only science stuff, I think it wouldn't go out as much. It wouldn't spread as much. So I decided to add also a creep style to it because I love horror and creepy atmospheric stuff. So it's what I do in my filmmaking. And so I did it for the app too. It's called the Solomon app. And this app has a single file audio. The single file audio never changes. It's supposed to be the exact same every single time. If audio manipulation exists, like an IT, like what ITC researchers say, this should change, or I have multiple different frequencies you can use, and infrasound and other high-pitched frequencies. I have frequencies for you to either change the atmosphere or for also to be maybe manipulated. It would be crazy and amazing if someone captures anything from that single file audio or the frequencies because they're not supposed to change. It's one audio file. And for example, like you could use SB7 or SB11, put it on a static station and just have it going and on that one channel and see if you could get a voice through it. So like an empty station that's not supposed to have anything. You could try that out. It'd take off the antenna too.
That's very interesting. You know, I'm putting together a documentary that's going to be a 4 to 5 year process and I've got some rookies. Mm-hmm. I'd like to get together with you on that app and put that on the documentary. Yeah, because I'm big on ITC and EVP because I come from an audio background. And I do everything I can to isolate as much as possible by matching voice parameters with every team member. You know, if the voice parameter and the voice waves match the voice wave of somebody, okay, you know it's that. And looking wherever you can look. But that I've never done before, and it would be interesting to see if I could get something.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I'm still looking for someone to find something out of that. To get something out of that, they can put it through boxes and stuff. Actually, that I think that's the way things get manipulated. If it does, is through like the boxes that people use, and the reason why is because you're using it's going through electrical, a lot of other guitar pedals and noise gates and everything like that. So maybe it gives it more of a chance for it to be manipulated when it's going through a lot of delay pedals because it gives it a delay. I don't know. It's just theory. It's not facts or anything. So
I got one of our fellow friends that's actually on my messenger, Joe Vitale, and he told me to tell you he actually got the words turn it off come through your app.
It was on the single file audio only, because if so, that's awesome. And please show that or post that, because that should be shared around. That shouldn't happen. That right there, you just validated that audio manipulation does exist because of that.
He's saying it was single file audio, so we should probably get him to share that a little bit for you to show that the app works.
That's awesome. I think I've heard it one time. I need to go back and review, see if I had it recording when it happened. But I was at Bobby Mackey's, and it was on the single file audio, and it said Matt. It was either Matt or Matt Benton. I can't remember now. It was like 3 or 4 months ago. And this was really cool. Like, because it was on a single file audio that doesn't have that. It's the Lord's Prayer is a single file audio. I want to actually talk to Matt Payne to add static to it. Also just plain static, for if they don't want to use that, because some people have religious beliefs and probably wouldn't want to use that because it's the Lord's Prayer backwards and forwards in a creepy voice. And I did that because I'm a horror fan and like creepiness. So, so I decided to do that. And it has nothing to do with anything religious related for me when I did it. It was just for a creep effect. And I think it should have static too if people don't want to use that. Because I've had other people comment saying, oh, they don't want to use it. It freaks them out too much. Or like it they think it's going to bring in the devil or whatever. So I might need to add something that's single file audio that's usable for everyone that has those beliefs. But, you know, the paranormals, I believe, should be about science. It should be focused on that because that's how you're going to discover things. Yes, there's people that come into the field for different reasons, like to help people in need. And yes, we don't know what all that's going on. I don't think we ever will completely. But there is things and ideas we can do with scientific methods to try and prove, like, for example, audio manipulation. We could already validate if it's legit or not if you do proper cross-checking. For EVPs, for example, let's go away from audio the ITC audio manipulation. Now, for EVPs, you can do something also for cross-checking. For my setup, the OMI rig, it's called the RVPR setup. That was created by Paul Browning and Roundtree. I forgot his first name. Roundtree and Justin also added something with the shotgun mic instead because it has more electromagnetic interference with that mic. But you put a shotgun mic, Zoom, any four-channel recorder, it could be a Tascam or a Zoom H4n Pro. That's the one I have, a Zoom H4n Pro and a shotgun mic. And it's recording onto one SD card. And you can, if you keep that SD card and you have a recording of, let's say, of some voice that came through the shotgun mic but didn't come through the Zoom recorder or the camera below, that's going to be validating that you caught something that wasn't supposed to be there. And since the Zoom recorder and the shotgun mic are recording on the same SD card, you can prove that that it wasn't manipulated and it was coming through one mic and not the other. That would be very interesting. Plus, I have a face cam to validate. Like, for example, if I'm doing Man vs. Paranormal, EVP comes through, the face cam would show that I didn't say a word. And I could cross that, check that too. Like I said earlier, I like the idea with the shotgun mic because if you put a cell phone, like going live, you're doing a live feed on your cell phone and a lot of data is coming through it. You can put that by the shotgun mic and you hear a lot of static coming through. It's because of the magnetic, I forgot what you call it. There's like these magnetic things inside of a mic and it gets affected by stuff like that, especially when there's not good shielding around it. And the shotgun mic does not have good shielding at all for that type of stuff. Zoom recorder does. The Zoom has really good shielding over that type of stuff. So if it's more likely to capture an EVP on a shotgun mic in theory because of what they say about entities manifesting in electromagnetic energy form, or that's how they do things for EVPs, for example. And that's why maybe in other recorders they capture more EVPs than others because the shielding isn't really good on certain recorders and it's very good on others. That could be another reason why EVPs are more frequent on other recorders than, for example, shotgun mic also could also be the same effect. I've just started using this setup because I needed the money for it. I actually had to do a loan just to finish this film and also make the setup that I've been wanting for the film. And it has also a 4K night vision camera. It's a FDR AX53 for visual and the best IR light in existence right now, known as the Deadlight 40 watt Deadlight Necro. It's really amazing. it's beautiful. It'll light up the whole night.
Yeah, I've seen them. They're expensive, but I would love to have one somewhere along the line. Yes.
The whole rig was expensive. It was $2,200 to build.
I can imagine. You're amazing from what I've seen so far on the creations you've done for the film. It's just incredible. Listeners, a little bit of a background when you're talking about mics. Basically, how a mic works is it uses electronic flashes, I guess you could say, in the hertz and other frames to amplify and then react back out. That's the easiest way to explain it. And some mics, as you're listening to our guest tonight, you'll find out that they're not quite shielded as well as other mics, if that makes sense. But we are listening to BBS Radio. BBS Radio is one of the largest digital radio stations in the United States. If you ever decide to do a podcast or a radio station, I encourage you to go to BBS. Go with the best. A little bit of a background. Paranormal Journeys into the Unknown, and several other people are going to be at Pottstown, Ohio. Pottstown, Ohio Elementary School is a old elementary school that they're looking to refurbish because it has a lot of history. So keep an eye on a lot of their links and their pages. They may do some GoFundMe situations and so forth to try to keep the school going. It's an amazing place, so make sure that you know a little bit about what's going on. And keep an eye on Paranormal Journeys into the Unknown. A lot of the people that Matt knows and I know are actually in it from time to time. They're a wonderful bunch of people. They're on Amazon. Make sure that you tune in and watch the show. Great bunch of guys. We're speaking to Matt Benton. Matt Benton has created his own film called Man vs. Paranormal. And he's taken the pleasure and the time to spend time with us here on Paranormal Truth and Reality. So we certainly appreciate him being here tonight. Matt, let's go back into a little bit about when you're planning on releasing the film and how you're trying to get the film out there for people to watch.
Yeah. There's a lot of people that are very interested in the film. Sorry, repeat that question for a second. Sorry, I got distracted when I was trying to post something for this for the show I was trying to post for.
Basically, you know, as we put together a documentary or a film, we try to get it out into the public as much as possible. A part of what we're doing here on the show tonight is making sure when you release this, yeah, that the people know where to find it and how you're going to get it out there to the public and okay, what your goal is. So let's just talk a little bit about that.
Okay, so yeah, I'm releasing this film. First, it's going to be in theaters, in select theaters, and then I'm going to be putting it into film festivals first, before I could release it on DVD, which is what I'm going to be doing, releasing on Blu-ray and also a digital copy. You could choose whichever one you want. I personally like physical copies. Other people like digital copies. I like collecting things, so when it comes to movies and stuff. So I'm going to be coming out with both. No DVDs, though. Everyone these days, it's 2018, we should all have a Blu-ray player now. And if you don't, you could get one for $60. not a very good one, but at least it's a Blu-ray player. I'm going to be releasing it in select theaters first. That's going to be limited time, limited tickets, because it's only going to be probably shown probably three times, I believe. That's just a guess right now. And I'm going to have some filmmaker friends critique it and see if I need to fix anything. Like, I'm most likely be sending it to Justin, of course. He's also a filmmaker. And yes, so if anyone wants new information or information about Man vs. Paranormal, just go to the Facebook page. It's called Man vs. Paranormal. And it's going to give you all the information about the release. It's going to come. I'm also releasing a couple, probably one or two more trailers in the future when it's closer. One's going to be more story oriented is what I'm going to try and do. And the last one's probably going to be the critic reviews from the film festivals I send it to. And well, yeah, so Man vs. Paranormal, just go to Facebook. It's on there.
Well, a little bit of background too, listeners. Film festivals are actually key when you're trying to do a documentary or a film. Not only is it good to get into them, but it gets your name out there to the public, and it gets your name out there to other film creators. And in return, that opens up a lot of doors to make sure that you can build something greater.
Yes. And also, there's a lot of producers looking and maybe find interest in this and maybe want to put it to cable or maybe want to, you know, do something with it if it's good enough. And I'm going to try my best to make a really good film. I've been doing filmmaking for 7 years now, or 7 or 8 years, and I'm putting all my experience and knowledge into this. Hopefully it's enough.
Well, it's a long road, but I mean, I from your clips, it looks like it's going to be an amazing thing. It's unique. It's got a new perspective to it. Nobody's ever done it before, so I wouldn't see why you wouldn't have a heck of a shot.
Well, it's hard to film it by yourself, to be honest. You know, I got the idea from Survivor Man. What's his name? What's that guy's name? He's a legend, that guy. Survivor Man. He's the reason why I thought of the idea, because I've been into the paranormal at that time. And I was watching a show. I was like, why isn't anyone doing this for the paranormal? And also, there's some theories that go along with it. So that's how I thought of the idea. And then I thought of the title idea because, you know, Man vs. Wild, Man vs. Food. I was like, why not Man vs. Paranormal? So that's pretty much how the origins of Man vs. Paranormal started. I was watching Survivor Man, and then I thought about that. And then I thought about that title in that way. And then that was back in 2012 when I created the idea. And like I said, I wasn't experienced enough in both paranormal and filmmaking for me to go ahead yet. So I waited for a long time until I felt like I was ready.
Les Stroud is the name of the gentleman on Survivor Man. Took me a minute to think about that.
He's a legend. So much respect for that guy. But yeah, but what I was saying, it's really hard to film by yourself and make it entertaining, especially when your mind is in a different state. Like, it's not like if I go on an investigation with my team, or if I go with a little small group, completely different. It's energetic the whole way, for me at least. I'm very energetic the whole way through and can perform a good investigation. This is different when you're doing it by yourself for multiple days, at least from my experience. And it was, for me, harder to keep my mind as active. Or it's hard to explain, is keep my mind. I'm trying to find words for this. I'll write it down in the movie for the script of the part when I do my voiceovers. I'll explain it better. But right now, on top of the head, I'm trying to explain this in words, what your brain is going through.
Well, it's probably dancing around so much that trying to stay on your goal more than anything else is probably complicated at that point.
Not only that, it brings down your energy even more when you don't have people around you. Your energy is very low, and you're being isolated. Also, from the paranormal in general, you know how entities seem to drain energy. Uh-huh. That's another factor. It's being alone for a long time, and also the paranormal, where you're getting drained. It feels like. There's multiple factors to it. It's very interesting. Like I said, it's a new experience that I got to learn a lot from. I don't know if I'm doing it again, though.
Well, I'd imagine you probably had times while you were doing the film where you didn't want to do it anymore.
Yeah, and the reason why is I would rather do it with the team. And personally, I just think it's more fun if it's with people you like. It's more fun. Like Justin Brown, love investigating with him. It's very boring. Let's just say that much. You know, paranormal is rare, right? So it's very boring.
Sitting around doing absolutely nothing in a dark room, waiting for something to happen when nothing goes on.
Even 10 times more boring when you're by yourself.
Yeah, I have a friend of mine, Rob Price, in the UK, and I like to call him the Survivor Man of the UK because he does that a little bit. He's more of an urban explorer though he's a paranormal investigator. So he will rig a camera to go on his chest and crawl into holes.
Yeah. I did a little bit of that in the film, too, when it came to that. Going into holes. Fun stuff.
Yeah, especially when you're on your own and you're getting dirty and you're trying to figure things out and it's cold and it's miserable and all just to try to see if you get something.
Yeah, it was definitely cold.
Well, I have a lot of respect for you, as I have a lot of respect for a lot of investigators. I told them that for many, many years. My talents didn't range into, even though I have been with investigating teams, my talents didn't range into being an investigator. I was fascinated with finding out how all of you did things. Because I learned, sitting in the background, I actually learned more than being the investigator by getting out with experienced people and just tagging along, asking your stories, learning how you use the different equipment, learning how you build the rigs. And that's why I'm in radio today. And a part of what I want to show in the documentary is the real truth behind everybody that works so hard. I have a lot of respect for everybody that goes out there, and more for people like you, because you went out there on your own. There's a big saying with a lot of investigators, never do it on your own.
Yeah, that's a huge saying. And I thought that was funny that the film is defying that completely.
Well, and it's a good thing, actually, to defy that a little bit, because a lot of people are afraid to go out there on their own. I've met investigators, including Justin, who did do it on his own for a little while because he was curious, and several other people that have done investigations on their own. And like you said, a lot of times it's boring. It's tedious. You have to carry the equipment around by yourself, so you got to figure out different ways to do it, different ways to get the shots and everything when you're doing things out there. But it's not really, a lot of times, as portrayed, as long as you learn in the long run the differences between what's going on. Because there's a lot of psychological things going on when you're sitting in a room or a location. And I can say that personally, because I have moved myself away from people to go in places by myself before and just stay there for a little while to see if I can get something. And if you're there too long, your mind can get to you.
Yeah, it does. Yes, it does.
Yeah. So doing something like that personally, from a personal standpoint, and I hope the listeners actually agree with this and watch it, from a personal standpoint, it's going to be interesting to see it.
Yeah. And not only that, for example, like, It was fun, actually. I love filmmaking. It's like my number one. Filmmaking and paranormal is my life. And making a movie was fun. It was also a lot more, it was a lot more production involved than an episode. I've made episodes of Soul Seekers, but also not in the way I've always wanted to. Because we, let's just say we weren't able to get to the locations to be able to film that long. As much as I did for these, where I got to, I prepped multiple days of filming for each location. So it was a lot more production value involved. And it's like a filmmaker / paranormal investigator's dream is to make a paranormal film. And it's not going to be the last. I have another one in mind right after this.
I love the fact that, that you've mentioned how long it takes to get the equipment and do the planning and seriously think about a lot of people. And I express this to the team working with me that quite recently, a lot of people just dive in, and don't get me wrong, diving in is great. We all have to start somewhere. So you start with the little video cameras and the small things you can get, and you just go to town. Yeah. But when you're creating a film or a documentary, you have to have the right equipment to make it look good. You have to have the right time. You have to plan for it. Like you're saying, you had to do 2 or 3 days of preparation in a location, and that's a good thing. Because you got to make sure you get the right shots. You got to make sure you know what you're doing. You got to make sure you plan ahead.
Yeah, for example, I would do 4 film days. It was 4 days total for each location. First day was all B-roll and interviews. Second day, B-roll and interviews, and that was the night I was getting locked in. So then I was locked in for that night and all the way to the last day, 3 days later, that was the location. And it was very interesting. Monroe House found some very interesting things, as you can see in the trailer. Have you seen the trailer, out of curiosity?
Yes. Yep, I watched it a couple of times. It looks like it's going to be an interesting thing. I'm actually excited to see it. When you get a chance to release it, you should let me know. I'll be glad to watch it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of planning involved with this. I did a lot of pre-production, like going through the history of the locations. Well, I already do that with normal investigations, but this was a bit different because I was looking for a place to film also, like a place that visually would be a good place to film, and also I wanted each location to have its own character as in itself for the film. Each location I chose had something unique, had something different about each one, and I like that. It's each location is going to have a different feel when it comes to the investigations, and I've captured different things for each one.
Well, the Monroe House is fairly active when it chooses to be anyway, to my understanding. I haven't had the privilege of being in the Monroe House yet, although I am scheduled to be out there this year for a short period in time, so I'm looking forward to it. I've had a lot of investigators tell me that it can be fairly active from time to time.
Yeah. This also, like, there was literally sweat, blood, and tears into this film. It's 5 years of trying to plan it, and then 1 year of filming, a little bit over 1 year. Over 1 year of filming for this, too. It's a lot of hard work. It wasn't like, you know, and when I say blood, I actually used my blood for this film, too.
Well, it takes a lot of planning and a lot of work to put something together that's very professional, looks good, that you can be proud of.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to work. I really do. From what you put together so far, it's very, very impressive on the little piece that I've seen so far. So, well, let's talk about. I know you have your individual paranormal investigation team. I'm assuming you probably have a YouTube channel that you like to promote on. So let's talk a little bit about that in the closings of the show here, so people know where to find you there.
Okay, Devil's Hour Productions, the YouTube channel. It used to be called Paranormal Research Unit, my team name, but then I changed it to that because I was realizing I'm starting to get into a lot of other projects in the paranormal field. So I changed it to a production page. But this production page is only for the paranormal stuff. And it's called Devil's Hour Productions. Check it out. Please subscribe and support the channel. And also, like I said earlier, go to Man vs. Paranormal on Facebook. It's going to give you all the updates on the film. And that's and also you can buy some merch if you want on the Devil's Hour Productions.com website. It's called the Paraseeker merch. That's the people that follow us. We call them the Paraseekers. You could go do all that if you want.
Well, you heard it first here on Paranormal Truth and Reality, everybody. Matt Benton and Man vs. Paranormal. Keep an eye out for Matt and the name, because I'm almost positive somewhere along the line, not only are you going to see him on television, but he's going to do some very big things. So with his unique views, he's an amazing man. He's got a lot of things ahead. Make sure that you look into his YouTube channel and follow him, follow his career, follow the way he's working, because you never know. In the paranormal, the most unique things that you might not think about end up being the next thing that you see on TV or the next thing that goes further. And who knows, you could be a massive paranormal movie producer somewhere along the line. And I can say that I had you here first.
Yep.
Well, you've been listening to Paranormal Truth and Reality, everybody. We've been talking with Matt Benn from Man vs. Paranormal. Next week's show, we're actually going to have a paranormal investigator, Aaron Potter, on. Aaron Potter has been investigating the paranormal for over 20 years. He has his own Twitter page and his own YouTube page as well, so that people can follow him on his journeys. He's a very unique individual. I do encourage you to actually tune in. Once again, make sure that you keep an eye on Matt Benton and Man vs. Paranormal, as well as his projects in the future. I'm sure him, Justin, even Joe Vitale, and the whole crew of individuals, which are wonderful people, by the way. If you ever have a chance, follow all of them. Ask many, many questions because they're very educated in the paranormal. They developed a very unique way of doing things, each and every one of them. I can't talk enough about everybody. I mean, you're new to me, Matt, but I've met most of these guys. I'm sure when I asked you to come on, they probably told you a little bit about me. Joe, Gavin, Paula, Justin, all of these guys have helped me out amazingly.
Yeah.
So we will let you off of here. This is Paranormal Truth and Reality again. As I end every show, as you're noticing today, from the scientific to the technology to the production to everything that goes into the paranormal, truth should always be that reality. So as you're tuning in, as you're looking, as you're watching television, understand that a lot of things and a lot of efforts go into this that a lot of you don't see when it gets on TV. Don't be afraid to ask the investigators. Don't be afraid to follow each individual one. And remember, the passion is always a key part of it. This is Paranormal Truth and Reality. We will see you next week. Enjoy your weekend and have a good night.